This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And hello, everybody. Thank you for being here with us today on the Sunday morning wake-up call. I hope you enjoyed your 30-minute showdown last week. Throwdown, showdown, and culture connection. Throwdown, showdown, but they're all important to the community, and that's why we do them. Today, though, the wake-up call is back. Our guest today, Mr. Josh Wheeler. He's director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
And I do this every time because I'm always like, that's a lot to say. That's a lot of phrase. So the Thomas Jefferson Center?
That's fine. Or even TJ Center.
TJ Center. Yeah. And we'll do the long thing every once in a while for the people who are tuning in a little late after church or on their way to get their groceries. So Josh Wheeler, the director at the TJ Center and the 2014 Muzzle Awards. Explain those a little bit, Josh.
Sure. The muzzles are an annual award that we give out that nobody wants.
I always call them, they're the raspberries. You know, when they do the Oscars at Hollywood, they also do the raspberries, right, which are the crappy movie awards.
Yeah, the sort of the anti good movie. Yeah, the muzzles are awarded to those individuals and institutions that, in the center's opinion, have committed some of the more egregious or ridiculous acts of censorship in the previous year.
So censorship, that's right. A bad thing.
Right. Yeah. We feel so anyway.
Well, and I did my grad school work on censorship in the public school system. So I'm all for the muzzles. So let's just jump right in. There's 9 of them that were given out as official muzzles, but you had how many to choose from? Many cases
in the
incidents.
In the end, probably we had somewhere around 250 that when we started narrowing it down at the beginning of the year. That's right.
But they were all qualified in some manner. It's not like somebody threw out the one about where the guy serving me soft serve ice cream was, you know, rude.
Oh, no. These all had some incident. Now, obviously, some were stronger than others, and there's some very early ones that we can quickly take out of the group. But, we usually have about that many this year because throughout the year, we're looking at newspapers and we're receiving nominations. Now, as the muzzles have gotten more and more well-known, I mean, we've been doing this 23 years.
Goodness.
And with the internet now, we can get lots of nominations from the general public, which is something we really enjoy. Because there we often find out about incidents that aren't reported on.
And you have a I don't want to say large, may not be the best phrase, but you have a great variety of people on your board of directors who help determine who wins the muzzles, correct?
That's right. And thank you for pointing that out, because our board of trustees is an incredibly diverse politically. They all have, let me just say that I think we represent a wide variety of political views, both on the left and the right and in the center. But they're all united in that belief that free speech is not a partisan issue, that free speech is free speech, and that there are threats to free speech on both the political left and the political right, and they're heroes of free speech on the political left and political right.
All right, so let's jump in and give people an example of our first. You had 9 muzzles for 2014, and the first one we want to talk about, not necessarily the best one or the most egregious or anything, because if you made it, you're in the top 9, and I don't think there's any differentiation between 1 through 9. So the first one that I pointed out was the Modesto Junior College.
That's right, issue. Out in Modesto, California. This is a very large institution. I think they have 80-some thousand students, day and night students on there. But they have, as do many colleges, unfortunately, they have designated a small area as a free speech zone. And it is only on this spot that people can engage in either, you know, a protest or a rally or demonstration. And it's only in this area that people can hand out materials to, say, passersby. Many people might think this sounds familiar because locally our whole Virginia Community College system was in the news about this. And luckily, once it became known publicly, they got rid of it.
It's foolish. Publicly known as foolish.
I always thought that, you know, the entire college campus was a free speech zone. And maybe there might be little exceptions to that because of disrupting classrooms or something like that. But the overall area is a free speech zone. But what was particularly striking about Modesto was that their policy prevented a young man who wanted to pass out copies of the Constitution on Constitution Day, on September 17th, and they came and they told him, you're not allowed to do this except in the free speech zone. Oh, and by the way, you have to reserve it in advance, and the earliest we can get you in is probably late September, early October.
So the young man at a community college couldn't hand out copies of the Constitution on Constitution Day.
On Constitution Day, even though it's interesting, even though all schools that receive federal funding are required to do some sort of education on the Constitution on September 17th. But, Modesto College, as we like to say, they took the Constitution out of Constitution Day.
So I'm curious, is this one, and granted, if you had 250 of them, I forgive you if you don't remember all the fine details. Was this one that you found in the newspaper or one that someone sent along to you as a suggestion, as a nomination?
Actually, this one was both. We knew about this one, but a number of people sent this one in as a nominee. It was just incredible. And the young man actually ended up suing Modesto Junior College, and he won, or at least in the end, I think they settled, because they very quickly, when talking to the attorneys, realized, oh no, we don't have a leg to stand on. And they ended up having not only to get rid of the policy, but pay $50,000 in legal fees. So these free speech zones ain't free. They can end up costing you some money.
All right, again, so we're talking with Josh Wheeler from the TJ Center about the 2014 Muzzle Awards. Josh is here sharing this. These just came out today, by the way, Thomas Jefferson's birthday.
Yes, happy birthday, Mr. Jefferson.
So very appropriate. Yeah. Thank you for coming in and joining us today. These were just released a couple days ago.
That's right. And in fact, we do release these, if you're wondering why April, we do release these in honor of Mr. Jefferson's birthday. We don't always release it on the 13th because for a variety of reasons, that's not always the best day to get the news out there. So it's on or close to April 13th is the reason we have our April announcement for the Muzzles.
And so we start off the program talking about the folks at Modesto Junior College not allowing a young man to distribute copies of the Constitution on the U.S. Constitution Day because he wasn't in the designated zone to do so and hadn't asked ahead of time for permission to do this.
And had not made a reservation to do so in advance.
Despite the fact that, if I heard you right, there are guidelines or there's some sort of requirement that publicly funded institutes do talk about Constitution Day in some manner.
In some manner. That's a federal law that Senator Byrd from West Virginia, who was a huge Constitution nut, he and I forget what year it was actually, it's not been that long, but he got an amendment to the budget bill, and that was a requirement that publicly funded institutions have to have some kind of educational component about Constitution on
right.
that day.
So let's move on to another one on the list. Again, there's nine issues and groups or entities or people that received Muzzle Awards this year. The Kansas Board of Regents. This one caught my eye because they're talking about someone who works in a publicly funded space doing something on his personal time.
Exactly. And it also, this is an issue that's going to come back more and more again because it involves public employee and use of social media. And it just talks
about social media. I'm not familiar with that phrase.
Facebook, Tumblr. Ask my kids. Facebook, Tumblr, YouTube, Twitter in this case. All of these means of communicating with each other that just didn't exist a few years ago. And a lot of places are playing catch up and trying to develop policies. And that's what happened here. This gentleman was a professor, a tenured professor at the University of Kansas. And on the last year when there was that horrible, tragic mass shooting at the Naval Yards in Washington, D.C., he tweeted about it. And his point of view, he obviously felt that this is the result of the NRA and their policies, which I don't subscribe to that attitude at all. But he does, and he, a lot of people do, because of the NRA's resistance to gun control laws. He felt there was their responsibility. Anyway, so he tweeted something to the effect of, and it's the actual tweets on our website, the blood is on your hands, NRA. May the next time it be your children. Not a very, very nice tweet. Not necessarily, I think, the most thought out and offensive. But it was his own tweet. He's entitled to his opinion. He can do these things well. It raised a furor in Kansas. I mean, legislators were threatening to cut off funding to the university unless they fired this gentleman. And to their credit, the university presidents who in charge said, no, we're not going to fire him. He had to be removed from teaching for a while, and because they were getting a lot of threats, and they wanted him out of the classroom. But they would not refuse to fire him. So then in Kansas, they have a Board of Regents, which is the governing body not only for the main university but all the public institutions. In all, about 30, when you count community colleges, Kansas State, various places. And they decided we need to have a policy about this. And they very quickly drafted a policy, a social media policy that they called. But they didn't consult any of the faculty members. They didn't consult any of the actual institutions. They just hastily threw this thing together. And basically it says that if anybody tweets or uses social media in a way that disrupts the harmony of the college and the working relationship, that the college's chief executive officer can fire them right on the spot. And it's clearly unconstitutional. They don't have that kind of authority to do this. But it was this sort of hastily drawn policy, this overreaction to this particular incident. Now, to their credit, I will say this. They got so much controversy about this. They said, okay, I tell you, we'll put together a working group with college faculty, and we'll ask them to review this and to give us their recommendations. You know, this is what they should have done in the first place. But even doing that, they said, okay, and the college faculty asked, would you suspend this policy until we give you our report, which is actually due this month? And they said, oh, no, we're not going to suspend this. We're going to keep this in place. So now you've got, at least for a six-month period, college faculty who don't know what they can tweet, what they can say, what they can't say, or students, because for fear that whatever that means, disrupting the harmony of the workplace and the college environment, they could get fired.
Sounds like pretty much you can tweet that my children visited this weekend, had a good time, but you can't tweet that, by the way, Kansas University basketball going through a hard time. You know, because that might disrupt the harmony of the school.
You never know. You never know. Or even your children visiting and having a good time. Maybe that's going to be upset. Who knows?
So the Kansas Board of Regents gets a 2014 muzzle.
Right. Exactly.
All right. So we've got seven more to go. Josh Wheeler here. He's the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
the Markets of Tiger Fuel Company. Homegrown since 1982, you can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
The second Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 11th through 13th at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, presented by Blue Mountain Brewery and WNRN. Hosted by the Steel Wheels, featuring Traveled by Turtles, The Devil Makes Three, Hayes Carl, Sarah Jarosz, and Tim O'Brien and Daryl Scott. The full lineup and tickets are at redwingroots.com.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being here with us on a beautiful Sunday. Hopefully you're out in the park or, you know, driving to the golf course or, you know, something fun and outside while you're listening to here WNRN. With our guest, Josh Wheeler, we're talking about the 2014 muzzles. Josh, the director at the TJ Center. So moving on to our next one. I love talking about these muzzles. The U.S. Department of Justice. And it seems like for the majority of things, the muzzles, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that they either seem to be government or schools.
Well, that raises a very fundamental point that I'm glad you raised, that a lot of people really don't get this. I mean, the first word of the First Amendment is Congress. Congress shall make no law. And now that's been interpreted through the years because of the 14th Amendment to be much broader, to apply to the government. So an act of censorship by itself does not mean that the First Amendment is implicated. You've got to have some kind of government action in order to implicate the constitutional right of the free speech. So that's the reason you see government or schools. And it's interpreted so broadly that schools, what you will see is it's public schools, not private schools, because private schools don't implicate the First Amendment.
Right, and we'll get to, I mean, we just did two of them, and there's nine muzzles, and the first two we talked about were schools, and from what I gathered, four of the nine are schools. And we'll get to the others later, the Wharton High School piece, the Pemberton Township piece. And one of the things, Josh, and we're going to go to the U.S. Department of Justice now, but I'd like to know, as we go along, were there changes made, and were they done by choice or by force? Now, because Modesto was pretty much forced to do that through the lawsuit, and Kansas sounds like that they made a change on their own, made an effort to change, but that the second part of that change needed to be by force.
Exactly. They've made promises that they'll look into changing, and they have not changed. In fact, they refused to change. I want to make that clear on Kansas, because we understand self-correction goes a long way to, in our view, to getting rid of the muzzle. And even if it's a little bit forced self-correction, we might take it out if they don't resist it too hard. But in the case of Kansas, they've said is that we'll look into it, basically, and they have not changed their policy yet, even though they were asked to do so. But in the Department of Justice case, yeah, this is another situation in which they agreed to make some changes. But the problem is a lot of these changes and the problem with what they did now, it's really up to them to decide if they're going to follow their own guidelines or not. And one of the reasons we gave the Department of Justice the muzzle was that in one of two incidents, they didn't follow their own guidelines. If they had followed the guidelines that had been worked out and understood by the members of the press to be enforced, this action wouldn't have happened. What they did was, excuse me, let me step back for a second. The Department of Justice has worked out with organizations, news organizations, these set of guidelines that they say that they'll adhere to. And one of those guidelines is that if they're ever seeking to subpoena the records of some of a reporter or something like that, that they'll give the news reporter or the agency that they work for notice so that the reporter can go to court and challenge the subpoena, say there's no need for this. Otherwise, all they have to do to allege to get a subpoena is simply to allege it to the court. And without the other side there, they don't have to have the other side there. And all they have to allege is that there's basically grounds, reasonable grounds for suspicion that these records would be relevant to us. And the reason they didn't have to give warning to the news folks is because they weren't actually serving the subpoena on the news folks. They were serving it on Verizon because they wanted, so a third party, they wanted, and one of the reasons we're giving them the muzzle is that they sued. They did not give the news source, the news media, in this case, the Associated Press. Excuse me, I'm going to In this case, the Associated Press. And they didn't give them any warning. They just went and they served the subpoena on Verizon for the phone records of the specific Associated Press offices because they're trying to determine the identity of somebody who had leaked information to the Associated Press, national security information, supposedly. And so we gave them the muzzle because of this incident where they departed from their own guidelines. They didn't give notice to the Associated Press. The reason they didn't give notice was they claimed that they were there's supposed to be a fear that the documents may be lost or the information may be lost. Well, that there was just no threat of that here at all. So there was a guideline that they could have adhered to that they didn't follow, that they went after the Associated Press. Now, the second incident is even more troubling because in this case, they wanted to get not only the information about what kind of communications were being made and when, they wanted to see the communications themselves of a particular reporter. In this case, it was James Rosen of Fox News. Again, they're trying to determine the identity of a particular source for Mr. Rosen. They got, in that case, though, but because they wanted to see the content of his emails, his phone records, that sort of thing, they had to meet a higher standard. And that stand, they had to get a search warrant as opposed to just a subpoena. And with the search warrant under this particular law that governed in this area, they had to have, if the target of the search warrant has to be somebody who is suspected of criminal activity. So the Justice Department said, okay, we'll name Mr. Rosen, we'll tell the court that he's a possible criminal co-conspirator in order to get the search warrant. And they did.
But he was really just the reporter.
He's just the reporter. He's just doing his job. The federal government labeled a gentleman, a reporter, a criminal for doing his job. And we know this because later when Attorney General Holder was being questioned about this by Congress, he basically says, oh, no, 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 that was the investigatory stage. We never intended to prosecute him. We never thought that he would really be guilty of any crime. In other words, he basically saying, oh, this limitation on our being able to invade someone's privacy can be overcome by a simple technicality. You know, we'll just allege that he was a criminal co-conspirator, and that gets us past that particular headache.
So they set the rule, and then they lied about it because they found it to be a little too that's where they want. It closed in what they really wanted to do.
Well, in this case, they didn't set the rule. I mean, in the Rosen case, they had to, by as a matter of law, be able to show probable cause. And they had to show probable cause that he was possibly engaged in criminal activity. And it's very disturbing if the government is able to label reporters criminals in order to access their information, then freedom of the press is basically dead in this country.
Well, let's continue on for another muzzle, freedom of the press, because I found this one especially interesting. I would have never guessed this one. The White House press office received a muzzle because they have reduced access to the president.
Right. Well, they've reduced photographers' access to the president. In the past, and this is a policy unique to the Obama administration. So it's not – I want people to realize, oh, we're not just singling going after them. Well, why didn't you go after Bush for this or Clinton or somebody
right,
else?
So it didn't start a while ago and has slowly right. gotten to be more of an issue. It's starting with the Obama
right.
administration.
And in the past, it used to be that they would let photographers in for – even though they were private – considered private kinds of things like meetings or – the president at work at the desk are doing sorts of things, they would still allow photographers in, news photographers, to get some photos of that. What this administration has decided to do is that they're not allowing that kind of access, but they are providing photographs from their own official photographs to the news services. Well, about 38 of these services, and we're talking the New York Times, the Associated Press, they've written a letter of protest saying, you know, this isn't real news. This, we're seeing what the you want us to see, you know, or we're printing and publishing only what you want us to.
This is the pose, not the actual news in action. You're sending us a posed picture.
Or as they called it, sanitized propaganda. that basically their defense is that we are providing more photographic evidence of what the president does on a daily basis than any administration in the past. But that's ridiculous, because they're offering their version of what they want the general public to see. And so it is very sanitized. I had to laugh, though. I'm sure a lot of people remember just last week there was this controversy where Big Poppy, you know, Major League Baseball player, got right. a selfie with the president. And so
the Red Sox go to the White House.
Exactly. And so I'm thinking, boy, those Associated Press photographers and others are off to the side. Oh, great. He gets to take a selfie, a lone picture. We don't get nothing.
Oh, yes, the baseball player who got some grief because the question was he taking that picture so he could – he was being paid to take it by the company that he was supporting with the particular type of cell phone that he used.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes, he was being questioned as to whether he did that because he had a Samsung. Oh, and so Samsung was paying the baseball player to represent their company.
Oh, that's just brilliant product placement.
Yes, there you go. All right, Josh Wheeler here with us. He's the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. The TJ Center giving out the 2014 Muzzle Awards. While we're talking politics and muzzles through politics, let's go to this one. The National Security Administration and the Homeland Security and T-shirts. Forced stoppage of T-shirts that sort of satirized them.
Yeah, I actually realized we've got you're following along with our text, which is very nice, but there's an incredible error we made right there. National Security Agency. Why we put administration? It's correct in the text, but in the title, we got it wrong. But yeah, this is a situation in which, I don't know, it just, who would have thought that the people at the NSA and the Department of Homeland Security didn't have a sense of humor? Who would have guessed it? But there's a gentleman who creates sort of novelty products, and he sells them online through a online real
Zazzle.
Yeah.
Zazzle.com. Who would have thought Homeland Security was checking out Zazzle?
Well, apparently they were. And what he would do is he took the seals of both the National Security Agency, the logo, you know, the official seal that they have, and he juxtaposed that with some funny little saying or something that he would say. For example, it had the NSA logo, and underneath it said the National Security Agency. The only part of government that actually listens. and then there was another one, Department of Homeland Stupidity, and I forget some others. But there's a law that says you cannot misappropriate and use these federal seals or symbols. But even those laws have to obey the Constitution. And you have the right to satirize and to parody our government institutions. So this is a very serious incident. They sent him a cease and desist letter, not to him, but to Zazzle, because that way a third party, and of course Zazzle doesn't want to have any trouble with the government. So they said, okay, we'll take them down. We're not going to advertise these products. And it took about 2 years for this guy through court to force them to make the change and put them back up. But they finally did. On the eve of going to court, they agreed to allow him to sell his product. So this is one in which it was forced. And here's the other thing. They can still enforce it against anybody else they want. It's just that because they didn't get a court decision that says, as a matter of precedent, you're not allowed to prevent people from doing this. The ultimate reason for these laws, by the way, is to make sure that the public doesn't confuse the message of the private seller, the satirist in this case, with official business.
Right. You can't use Trademark. You can't use trademark right. material.
Exactly. Essentially, it's the same thing here, only there's a different statute for it. Well, I think the public is pretty smart. I think the public is going to know when they see National Security Agency, the only part of government that actually listens.
I like this one. Spying on you since 1952.
Yeah, exactly. I think most people are going to recognize that that's not the official message of the National Security Agency.
There are government budget issues, but the NSA is not making money for its budget by selling T-shirts that make fun of itself.
Exactly. We're not stealing any of their commercial product audience away from them.
Oh, goodness. 11:32 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about the 2014 Muzzle Awards. Josh Wheeler, he's director at the TJ Center. The Muzzle Awards, explain again real quick.
They are an annual awards program given to those institutions and individuals that, in our opinion, we feel have committed either especially egregious or especially ridiculous acts of censorship in the last year.
How do you limit it to 9? I mean, is that your goal, is to have 9 of them, or would you have 11 or 7?
Well, we sort of shoot for 10. And in fact, there are actually, if you think about it, there might be more than 10 here. It's just we give one muzzle to two groups for essentially doing the same thing. But we try to keep it down to 10. But at the same time, we don't want to be too arbitrary about it. If we have 10 good ones and we think, well, you know, this one's really, there are really 11 that are deserving and representative of trends out there, we'll go ahead and go for 11, or we'll just award 9 as we did this year. But actually, another way of counting it, I think we probably have 12 because we've given it to two institutions, the same muzzle.
Have you found, whether it's in terms of the news articles, or you said that the TJ Center board looks through the news to find items, but you also have nominations that are sent to you. Yeah. Have either of those increased with all the conversation that we've had about Edward Snowden and the NSA and all this, you know, just access to what otherwise people would consider their privacy?
There's definitely been a lot of nominations this year that sort of focus on that particular issue. I don't know that I can say that they're a direct response to that, or that there's been this overall increase because of that. I can say, though, that in the 23 years since we've been doing the muzzles, we obviously have much more access to – we have access to much larger amount of information and possible candidates. Because what's happened in the last 23 years? Well, the internet – for example, when we were doing this 23 years ago, we didn't have the internet. We were going through actual newspapers, you know, and cutting out articles, things like that. Now we can access much more information very easily, as well as hear from the general public very easily about these Muzzle Awards. So as they gain and visibility, we're getting more and more nominations.
All right, 4 more to go. We'll be visiting Tennessee, North Carolina, Florida, and New Jersey. Hang with us.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of independent music radio.
Doug Burke, associate broker, property manager, and realtor with Montague Miller. Doug Burke has spent over 17 years finding dream homes in the Charlottesville area. He can help you find yours. You can contact Doug Burke for buying or selling at dburke.montaguemiller.com.
Automated Office Systems, providing WNRN with personalized local copier and printer service and maintenance. Automated Office Systems is headquarters for all of your computer needs, including sales and service of desktops, laptops, and tablets. That's Automated Office Systems, AOScorp.net.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth from the Charlottesville Waldorf School. You are invited to our presentation, Why Waldorf Works, on April 24th at 6 p.m. At this event, 2 cultural anthropologists will examine the benefits of holistic education. You can learn about the Waldorf educational system and how it is developmentally appropriate. These 2 local anthropology professors will give their presentation at 6 o'clock at the Charlottesville Waldorf School. For more information on this presentation and the school, cwaldorf.org. I'm Elizabeth, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today. We are talking about the muzzles, censorship, people who have, you know, really struck down hard on other people in terms of the censorship. Josh Wheeler, director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Josh, I said we got four more left. Tennessee, Florida, North Carolina, and New Jersey, where these happen. The last several years you've been here with me, it seems like we always have at least one in Virginia. But not this year? I mean, did we make the top, you know, 11th or 12th position and just stepped out, or have we improved that much?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a question where you can say the whole state has improved, but there just have not been the incidents that came out of Virginia just did not seem to be muzzle-worthy in the end. One of the reasons the folks that got a lot of Virginia muzzles was the Virginia Department of Corrections. We were giving them a muzzle every year, it seemed. And so finally we just said, all right, look, you're getting this is you're not getting the message, so let's try it another way. And we gave them our third, only three in 23 years have we given out what we call a lifetime muzzle award for just continuous and repeated acts of censorship. So Virginia was, the Department of Corrections was one reason that we, you heard about Virginia a lot, but yeah, I'm happy to say that we just did not find one this year that we felt was as strong as the others.
I just find that so funny.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of an irony. I'll tell you here. There's a moral hazard here, Rick, which is that as the muzzles come through, we'll get some that just look so ridiculous that I'm thinking to myself, oh, this will be great. This is, people are going to really be interested in this. And then they self-correct or they do something. And I find myself going, oh, darn, they did the right thing. Oh, they reversed themselves on this. But and then I recognize, what am I saying?
Well, let's run to a few who didn't. How about the Tennessee General Assembly, right, who found that animals also have First Amendment rights?
That's right. Cows have privacy rights, too. That's how they tried to sell it, basically. This is a growing trend. This is something we're going to see a lot more of. These are called ag-gag laws, agricultural gag laws. And essentially, they are laws that attempt to put silence a lot of these animal rights activists who sneak in to document the way that the process by which animals are turned into food for human consumption.
You sneak in at night with your video camera to show how the poor living conditions of the cows and the chickens kind of thing.
And the way in which they're treated when put to death, the way in which they're put to death.
Right, when slaughter comes.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Now, but here's the thing, though. You may ask, what has this got to do with the muzzle award? Because private businesses do have the right to say, look, you can't come on our property and you can't be videotaping on our property. We have the right to keep you from doing that. The problem with these ag gag laws is that they're getting more and more aggressive in trying to stop that. And in the Tennessee case, they're saying not only do you can't come on to do this, but if you have any video of our audio recording of an act of animal cruelty that you took with the intent to distribute it to the public, then you have to turn it over to law enforcement within a very short period of time. Now, think about that for a second. If you were a reporter reporting on anything and the government is coming in and saying, oh, you have to give us your material for whatever story you're working on, your investigative report, that would be, again, freedom of the press would be at great risk here. And that's what this Tennessee bill did. It was requiring these people to turn over this material. Now, this bill didn't become law because the governor had his AG look into it, and they came back and they said, no, this just can't pass constitutional muster. This is not going to do it. So he didn't sign the bill. He vetoed it. But the sponsors of the bills have vowed to bring it back again next year. And so we give the muzzle in hopes that, you know, you ought to start thinking twice. Go, you know, this is not constitutional to try and get this kind of information this way, force people to turn over this information.
This sounds more like the Tennessee legislature making rules to help the large farms, not necessarily to make rules to for the privacy of the animals.
Oh, that's absolutely
or even
right.
Against the press, necessarily. Just the first step is, oh, these are businesses that we want to support.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the millions of dollars of lobbying by the agricultural or the meat-producing industry behind this, you can trace it. And, in fact, the two sponsors of this Tennessee bill both have very strong ties to agribusiness, if you will. And what gets me on this one, which I just really just gets my goat, if you will, pardon the pun, is that they passed this one in connection with an animal cruelty statute. In other words, they're saying, oh, all we're trying to do is get law enforcement on top of these issues more quickly. That's ridiculous. You know, these are the people. The last thing they want is this information getting out in the public. If they really wanted this to be a means to diminish acts of animal cruelty, they would have required everybody with information or knowledge to turn this kind of to give notice to the police. But no, the only people they're requiring to do it are people who audio or video record this kind of the industry. And how it's actually working with the intent to disseminate it. So they're obviously only going after animal rights activists.
Have you found, and granted, Tennessee was the state that got the muzzle, but have you seen any material like this and of all the other nominations where other states, whether it's for agricultural business or whatever, are because you've named it Ag Gag,
yeah,
which makes me think that there are other states and other situations where this has already taken place or is certainly under consideration.
Oh yeah, this is one that we're going to hear more and more about, this kind of thing. I think at least 12 other states now have them. Now there are various degrees of concern about these. As I said, it's one thing to say, you know, you're not allowed to come on our factory and to
right. You can't trespass.
Right, but it's another thing to try and go after the information this way. And so the laws, we felt this one was the most representative and represented the most extreme of trying to get at information and force people to turn over information that they can't do it. They have no right to force you to turn this kind of information over.
The 2014 muzzles, that one's from Tennessee General Assembly in their Ag Gag bill, representing the privacy rights of cows and chickens. We got a few more left here. Thanks for tuning in today to WNRN, your community radio station, 1145 with Josh Wheeler. He's director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Let's see. Let's pick another one. Oh, I always love the school ones. Wharton High School and the principal there received a muzzle because of, I mean, he just seemingly ruined a young kid's graduation day.
How do you pronounce it? Salutatorian. Salutatorian. Both the valedictorian and the salutatorian of the class, the best students in the class, the graduating class, are invited, of course, to give their graduation speech. This is becoming more and more of a tradition. Unfortunately, what also seems to be becoming more of a tradition is that schools are saying, look, we want to see the text of your speech beforehand.
Right. We'd like to censor your speech.
We get to approve it before you get to say it. And this young man, he's a little bit of a gadfly. He wanted to say something about, I think he was talking about how school is great, but also how there's some things we can prove about school. And apparently, for whatever reason, it was a bone of his contention that the condition of the bathrooms in the school were atrocious. And so he had a reference to that in his speech. Well, guess what? That got cut out. They said, no, you can't talk about that in your speech.
Principal didn't want that.
And he didn't do it.
But in fact, he was censored twice, right? If I remember the notes right, he wrote that in his first one and then had to approve it again. And even the second one, they made some other changes.
That's right.
Even though the bathroom part had already been stricken.
It had already been stricken. It was finally the third edition that made it. Now, in between the time that the approval of his script, that he had the approved script, and graduation, he said, okay, there's another way to skin a cat. So he produced his own video and posted it on YouTube on its own about the poor conditions of the bathroom.
Right, took photo, video of the bathrooms and put it up that way.
So comes now graduation day. He's up there. He's making a speech. He's very animated. And he gets about halfway through it, and he stumbles over a few words. Well, then he immediately it took just a few seconds, and he's back on track in just a few seconds, back to the approved script. But in the video that they took, you can see the principal is off to the side. Apparently, he's following the script as the young man delivers it. And in that few seconds when he stumbled over the words, I guess the principal thought that, oh, no, he's going to that bathroom stuff. So he stands up and he makes a cutting thing across his neck.
Right, that slashing sign.
To the sound people off stage. And they cut off the mic of the salutatorian. Just cut it off right there. And the principal then says, they don't thank you, so-and-so. And then he moves on to get the thing. And everybody was confused by it. The young man was embarrassed by it. And his family, his friends, his classmates. And what's worse is they didn't give him his diploma then. They made him – he was escorted out of the building and had to come pick up his diploma later. The principal never apologized for this. We're not absolutely sure why he cut him off, but that's part of the problem. He won't even give an explanation as to why. But it seems readily apparent that the reason he did it was he really thought this guy was going off script and he wasn't going to have that at all.
You talk about the video. You can see in the video, you can see the principal making the slashing sign. You can see and hear the length of the stumble over the script. Is that on your website?
It was on our website, but the video, for some reason, and it will be again if we can get access to it, but for some reason, the video has been taken down, and we don't know why. It was reported by Tampa Bay Online. I think they had the video of it. And
the principal went there and made a slashing sign. And
I don't know if that's what happened, but apparently they took the video down. The article is still there.
But you had the video through a third party, and now it's not available by the third party anymore.
Exactly.
But you're hoping that it is?
Yeah, we're hoping we'll find it again, and we'll post it as soon as we do.
What is the website address, by the way, for the TJ Center?
It's very simple, just tjcenter.org.
Because there's more detailed conversation, or I guess written statement, about each of these pieces. So if you have a favorite that we've talked about, the young man giving out copies of the Constitution on Constitution Day at Modesto Junior College, who was chased away and told that sorry, sir, but you can't give out, you can't distribute things here in this particular space. Go back in the corner and do it. But you didn't ask ahead of time. Or maybe you want to know more about the NSA and Homeland Security stopping the T-shirt sales on Zazzle.
Yeah, and you can see actual T-shirts there. We have pictures and images. Yeah, on the website, we have a lot more information, a lot of videos related to each of these things. And they're a lot more eloquent than I am on Sunday morning when I've had a late night. They articulate much better, much gooder than I'm doing this morning.
I have that problem every Sunday, and I'm sure anybody listening can nod their head in agreement at that. All right, so we got two left. And by the way, I'd been asking whether there was any change made by choice or by force, and what I heard was that the Wharton High School principal turning off that mic and not even allowing the young man to pick up to go through the ceremony of collecting his diploma without any microphone on
him.
He couldn't even do that.
Yeah, they didn't let him sit down.
Chased him out of the area. He was taken out by two security guards.
Yeah, he was escorted out, and he didn't get to graduate with his friends, didn't get to get his diploma. I mean, this is a watershed mark in this kid's life. And this principle out of this, you know, whatever motivates him to have such complete control over the content of what a student says. And by the way, let's remember, this is the student with the second best GPA of the graduating class. So in other words, they're saying, we don't trust you, the top students, the top products of our whole educational process, to do something that will embarrass us. They wouldn't allow it.
Well, let's talk about embarrassment by going to the North Carolina General Assembly Police, who did something and then had a judge say, what the hell were you doing there? who arrested a reporter when he was covering an assembly.
Approaching. Yeah. This is – and this we do have video on the website. there were a number of budget cuts in the North Carolina budget in the last year that many people felt were unfairly targeting programs for the poor. You know, this doesn't have anything to do with that, but this is as a result of that, there started to be these regular protests. In fact, it became a regular weekly protest. And the group would come and they would go to the General Assembly building and they would begin at a certain time and they'd begin their protest. And at some point, the police would say, the police who are responsible for the General Assembly building would say, you need to disperse. If you don't disperse, we're going to arrest you. And then people would get arrested. And it got so organized that they were even wearing color codes. So if you're not going to be part of the protest, go over here in this color code. And if you are here, because otherwise you'll be arrested. Well, this reporter was there covering it one day. He had his press credentials on. He was a notepad. He wasn't part of the group. The group was told to disperse. He's there covering the story. But rather than go after the protesters, they go after the reporter. And he identifies himself. Everybody knows that he's a reporter. And yet they take him into custody. They handcuff him. They put him in a holding cell for several hours. And they charge him with, you know, disruption. This is a problem. It's when the government starts labeling reporters criminals for doing their job, for, you know, covering a real news story, as this was. You know, freedom of the press is in big trouble. But as you said, a video was taken of this arrest, and that's on the website. And a couple of weeks later, several weeks later, when the prosecuting attorney was shown this video, because he's, you know, we're going to go and prosecute the guy soon. It's like, what the heck is this? He said, no, this is not, I'm not going to go to court with this. This guy was just doing his job.
And if I remember from the material that I read, it looked as though, and seems to be the case, that the police walked right to him. It wasn't like he was part of the group. They walked right to him and arrested him
of everyone else. It's just puzzling, and we don't know why they were targeting the police, the reporter this time, but they really seem to be doing that.
All right, 11:55 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about the 2014 Muzzle Awards with Josh Wheeler. He's the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Let me remind you that you can go to the WNRN YouTube page. There's some new videos of the WNRN in-studio sessions to share with you on the WNRN YouTube page. Plus, there's hundreds of archive sessions for you to discover. The best way to see the in-studio videos, go to the website, WNRN.org, and click on WNRN's YouTube page. Check out one. They're pretty cool. All right. 5 minutes left with Josh for, I don't know if this is my favorite one or not, but as I told you before we started, it was one of the two of the nine where I went, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So talk about the Pemberton Township High School. Again, as I said, awful lot of schools in these Muzzle Awards every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, these are the ones I feel the most ambivalent about. Not that they're not deserving, but it's because these poor high school folks, they've got so many people just jumping on them for everything. You know, they've got parents will jump on them for every, you know, if there's a book that they don't like being taught. They've got, then if they publish something that they do like, then they've got folks like us coming in and yelling at them for, you know, why are you censoring this book or censoring that? But nonetheless, sometimes they still deserve it, despite my sympathy for they're trying to do the best that they can. And in this case, the student newspaper, high school newspaper, wanted to do an article on smoking in the bathrooms. They interviewed students. They went around. They did a very good job. And this newspaper has a faculty advisor. And he was very impressed both with the story and the research and everything that they – the way in which they approached this and the objectiveness of their position. Well, the principal said, no, you can't publish this. We don't want this. And they asked why. And then she just said, no, I'm not – you know, I'm just telling you because I said so, basically. Well, then there's another story that they tried to do, and the principal, for some reason, edited it, saying, you can't, I don't want this question in here, and I don't want this question that you asked in there. And the faculty advisor is saying, no, you have to have those in there because it shows that they gave the opportunity for the other side to respond.
Right. They asked the question of the person that they're talking about, saying, would you like to make a comment?
And
that person said no, and the principal was saying, I don't want that in there.
Okay, and I don't want that in there. Third thing, the students say, okay, how can we make this frustration that we're feeling into a positive experience, something to report on? And so they proposed, how about if we do a story about the same thing you did your grad work on? Why don't we look into the idea of students' rights the faculty right or administration's right to censor? What about free speech in high school? So we'll do a paper on censorship. Well, no, the principal censored the article on censorship. They weren't allowed to do that as well. Now, this is troubling because, in fact, the law in this area is very, very much on the side of school administrators. But just because they have the authority to do this, because they are the publishers, if you will, of the newspaper, you know, we don't feel that we're obligated to condone or support their decision. We have the right, even if they might, under the First Amendment, have the authority to do this, we don't necessarily think they did the right thing in doing this and censoring the student paper.
Right, and one of the reasons that this school and the principal received the muzzle was that the irony is that you're not even telling the kids why.
Yeah, that's it. They don't even tell the students. They don't even try and make them make it a teachable moment for them. But that reminds me of a last thing, your point I'd like to bring up. You know, giving this article that where they objected to showing that they asked the party that they were doing the story about, right, asked for their opinion. With the muzzles, we do the same thing. Before we finalize our list, we write to all of the recipients and we say, you're being considered for this dubious distinction. However, we recognize we may not have all the facts. We recognize that the news reports may be wrong. We'd like to get your point of view. We'd really value your assessment of this. And about half the time they respond, and many times they will give us mitigating evidence. They will say, okay, that takes them off the hook. But just as often, and this is what I love, is it'll be, thank you for writing me. I do not deserve this muzzle. I am a firm believer in the First Amendment and do not believe in censorship. However. And then they just start digging the ditch. They just start digging the hole deeper for themselves, going on and on. And it was the most perfect confirmation that we could have of their deserving it, because they just go on this long explanation of why we had the right to censor in this particular case.
Josh Wheeler, the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression and the 2014 Muzzle Awards. Josh, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
I know.
Maybe next year.
And happy birthday,
TJ.
Mr. Jefferson. Les Temps Perdue up next. Next week here, Lee Channing be here. Stretch out those fingers. Get him ready to call in.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by The Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.